भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम अज्ञानतिमरंदस्य गणार्जनशलाकया चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्य कृष्ण. So we're continuing the reading of the fifth canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 4, entitled The Characteristics of Rishabhdev, text number 15. I guess we're continuing, not chanting the verse because it's in prose. So I'll just chant a couple of times.
Yad-yach-chir-shanya-charitam tat-tad-anubhartate loka. Yad-yach-chir-shanya-charitam tat-tad-anubhartate loka. Yat-yat.
Does this verse sound familiar? Yes. It's quite a familiar verse. So translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Whatever action is performed by a great man, common men follow. Here it's more condensed, shorter version of the same verse. Only one line. Purport. A similar verse is also found in Bhagavad Gita 3:21. It is essential for human society to have a section of men perfectly trained as qualified brahmanas, according to the instructions of Vedic knowledge. Those below the brahminical qualification, administrators, merchants, and workers, should take instructions from those ideal people who are considered to be intellectuals. In this way, everyone can be elevated to the highest transcendental position and be freed from material attachment. The material world is described by Lord Krishna himself as Dukhalayam Ashashvatam, a temporary place of misery. No one can stay here, even if he makes a compromise with misery. One has to give up this body and accept another, which may not even be a human body. As soon as one gets a material body, he becomes dehabrit, or dehi. In other words, he is subjected to all the material conditions. The leaders of society must be so ideal that by following them, one can be relieved from the clutches of material existence. So, in this purport, Srila Prabhupada there's three main arguments, three main topics, the first of which is the importance of trained leaders, the importance of ideal trained leaders. Prabhupada says a section of society, not everyone, not that everyone has to become a qualified Brahman or leader, but at least a section of society. And this was actually Prabhupada's desire in studying the Hare Krishna movement in particular, was to find out and train up a section of society, because as he explained, the society in itself is like a body, just like a body, with a head, hands, belly, and legs. And like any body, it's guided by the head. A headless body is useless. It will go, it's going haywire, going everywhere and anywhere. So therefore, Prabhupada saw this world, especially in the Western world, also all over the world, as a headless society, a society without any intelligence, without any guidance. Therefore, it was being pulled in all directions by unqualified so-called leaders. And it's interesting here how Prabhupada explains that if you have the brahminically qualified persons, they can pull up, they can guide the other classes of people. It's not, if there's no personal motivation, if a Brahman is actually qualified, free from all material attachments, As Prabhupada explains in a number of places in the Krishna book, that a brahmana is actually takes a vow of poverty. He has no interest in material acquisitions. He's completely dedicated his time and energy to spiritual development. And therefore he's qualified, he's trained up in Vedic knowledge to be able to give instruction to administrators, merchants and workers, the other classes of society, not only how to execute their duties, but how to perfect their lives. Because as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, manghi partha vipashita yepishu papayoneya striyo vaishastata shudras tepi antiparangatim. O son of Pita, those who take shelter in me, though they be of lower birth, women, vaishyas, and shudras, can attain the supreme destination. In other words, the supreme destination is not just meant for brahmanas or intellectual or trained up spiritualists, but is actually meant for everyone. This is the vision of Srila Prabhupada. This is the vision of, for example, Vasudev Dutt, that he was wanting to, or Prahlad Maharaj, they were wanting the wealth, they're interested in the welfare of every living entity, not even just human society, but they're actually interested in the eternal welfare of every living entity in this world. So, a real brahmana, because he has no interest, no personal interest or personal motivation to enjoy anything within this world, his only desire is to see to the welfare of the rest of society. Just as I know Radhanath Maharshi refers to Kolavecha Sridhar many, many times, how he was offered so many material opulences, but he responded that actually I'm completely happy and satisfied just remembering you, my dear Lord, remembering Lord Chaitanya, and being able to engage in his pastimes with Lord Chaitanya. He had absolutely no interest, even with the possibility to become extremely wealthy. Or Sudama Brahmana. Sudama Brahmana was a qualified Brahmana. As we know, he was classmate of Krishna. He actually studied in the same school as Krishna himself. But by his karma, by his nature, he was actually a very quite poor. He was so poor that actually he was very, very skinny. He became practically emaciated. He didn't even have enough funds to acquire sufficient food. But he was quite happy worshipping Krishna, going out and begging just a few alms daily, just enough to survive. But his wife, it's explained that his wife, sometimes it's misunderstood, this reference, because sometimes it sounds like that his wife, because she wanted some material wealth, she pushed him, why don't you go, you got a rich friend, Krishna, why don't you go and ask Krishna for some wealth. But actually, if you read carefully in the Krishna book, it doesn't say that. It says that actually because she was so concerned about him, about her husband, that he was in such a poverty-stricken condition. Therefore, she encouraged him to go ask Krishna for some, even just a little bit of wealth. She was actually very purely motivated in asking her husband, even though normally you would imagine that the wife would be, why don't you get some money, why don't you go out and bring home some wealth? At least you have a wealthy friend. But as we know, he went to visit Krishna, and he was so ecstatic. It says that he was floating just like in an ocean of nectar as he entered into Dwarka and saw the palaces of Krishna and realized that now I'm going to see my Lord, I'm going to be able to visit and see, have the darshan of Krishna. He completely forgot what he came for. He completely forgot all about his plans to ask anything, the instructions of his wife. And he was just happy to be in association with Krishna. but as we know the story, he visited Krishna. Krishna took some chipped rice that he had brought. His wife insisted he bring at least some offering and some chipped rice. And he took that. Krishna took that and ate it. And when he was just about to take another bite, Rukmini said, no, that's enough. You've he'll be blessed that he'll become wealthier than more opulent than Indra, just by that one bite that you've taken. proper food for you. So the Brahman, he left. He forgot all about asking Krishna for anything, and he went back. As we know, he went back to his home, so absorbed in remembering and thinking about how wonderful Krishna was. How Krishna, even though he was such a poor, insignificant Brahmana, how Krishna had received him and so warmly. Actually, Krishna got up from his seat and put Sudama Brahmana right on his seat, had him sit there. And he worshipped him, practically speaking. And he was so ecstatic, just thinking how what a wonderful friend Krishna is, that he embraced me. He was so kind to me. But then, as we know, he got home, and had no motivation, no interest. So he didn't ask Krishna for anything. But and then, when he got home, as we know, he found a palace more opulent than Indra's palace. Krishna gave him everything. He didn't have to ask, but Krishna gave him everything. So this is a Brahmana, that he's actually only interested in glorifying Krishna, only interested in spiritual development. And he has no worry, he's not in any anxiety. How will I be provided for? How will I get some wealth? But he has full faith that Krishna will provide whatever is necessary. For my maintenance, I will go on serving Krishna. And these are the persons who are qualified to guide the rest of society. Why? Because they have actually understood what the real goal of life is. And therefore they can bring up and pull up the others who are less intelligent, are less able to see what the goal of life is. Those who are thinking that have some other motivation, some other desire. Whether in the form of power and administration and controlling and ruling, as administrators or merchants, where a great greed for gaining wealth, or simple workers that actually don't have any idea what really the goal of life is, that are just working hard trying to get some sense gratification. So as Prabhupada says here, that under the guidance of these qualified brahmanas, everyone can be elevated to the transcendental position. Even the Shudra, even the lowest person. But only if the society is trained in that way that they work under the guidance of Brahmanas. If that head is taken away, then people, due to lack of Vedic knowledge, they're simply engaged in activities which will bring them future suffering. And there's really an interesting phrase that Prabhupada uses here. This is the second part of the purport. Prabhupada speaks about how this world is dukalayam ashashvatam, a temporary place of misery. And that the brahmanas being trained, and the society, it's in all of the society being trained to follow the brahmanas, they'll liberate them from that miserable condition, temporary place of misery. And then Prabhupada says that no one can stay here even if he makes a compromise with misery. That's an interesting phrase. Even if he makes a compromise with misery. That means if somehow or other he's able to adjust things by his endeavor to escape some misery, just like we know I haven't been there in a long time, but in California where Titikshava Karunak, he lives there. And I grew up there, but I haven't been there in a long time. They're very interested in healthy eating. As far as I remember, very interested in there's supermarkets. I saw just now that on the corner here there's a health food shop. that's a kind of a new thing, I guess. There's just a new building they built just on the corner here, and then there's immediately a health food shop. So they're trying to follow the. But why do they? Some they become vegetarian. Some they drink the juice of grass. Wheat grass juice, carrot juice, all kinds of juice. But what is their motivation? Their interest is how to make a compromise with misery, how to make my body more comfortable and healthier and stronger, but for what purpose? So I can go on enjoying sense gratification as much as possible and not have to and be relieved of this misery of this material life. But Prabhupada points out here that they're foolish because even if they are able to make this compromise with misery, and it's quite a beautiful place. And many people, I think 500,000 people a year, they move to California because it's nice weather, nice beaches, clean, very nice food, nice vegetables, fruits. So it's quite a nice place to live. But as actually, the last time I visited there was a few years ago. I visited there briefly last year to visit my family, but just a few years ago. And I was visiting one friend who had it in Mill Valley, up near San Francisco, and had a beautiful house on a hill overlooking the mountain. And we were standing on the porch looking out over Mount Tamalpais. It's a beautiful view. And this other friend who came to visit me at this friend's house, he came up behind me, and he is someone who had gone to India many years ago. When we were young, he had gone to India and studied some philosophy. And he came up behind me and he said, it's nice, it's an illusion, right? But it's a really nice illusion, isn't it? it's a really beautiful illusion, isn't it? So that's the mentality. It may be an illusion, but it's really a nice illusion, and we're really enjoying this illusion a lot. And we're very happy to stay as long as possible and enjoy this illusion. But Prabhupada says very clearly here, one has to give up this body and accept another, which may not even be a human body. Even if he's made a compromise with misery, he's able to move to Beverly Hills or Marin County or wherever, or even on Phuket Beach. As we know, Devamrita Maharaj was referring a number of times to the waves, tsunami waves on Phuket Beach. And that's actually much more beautiful than California, as far as I understand. Tropical paradise. And still, and they made a really good compromise with misery. Practically, before we arrived here, I was in Italy, and they were reporting all day long on the television news reports, all the different important actors, rich people, wealthy people from Italy who were there in Thailand because it was Christmas time. It was Christmas time, and that's when everyone has vacation. It was 1 week vacation. So many, there were all the richest and famous, most famous people in Italy. Many of them were there, actually. Even one very famous newscaster, something like when we were kids, Walter Cronkite, is like that famous in Italy. He was right there in the Maldives, in the islands. So they had made a really great compromise with misery. They right in the middle of winter, when it was below zero in the West, they had flown off to paradise. They had flown off to a beautiful, much more beautiful than California. And then, as Prabhupada says, one has to give up this body. And so many people, they were swept away, and their so-called compromise with misery was an illusion. It was just a joke. Misery came anyway. No matter how you try, even if you're the most expert, Hiranyakashipu, that by performing 100 years austerity, standing on your toes, and become so powerful that you can conquer the whole universe, still you're going to be forced to give up this body and take another material body, where you may not be able to make such a... Because if your compromise with misery was based on exploiting sense gratification in an illicit way, in a sinful way, then your next body will be full of suffering. There will be no compromise with misery. You'll get full misery in your next life. So then your so-called compromise was just a joke. It was an illusion. It lasted. It was temporary. It lasted. Dukkhalayam ashashvatam. It was just a temporary reaction to a place of misery. So the Brahminical class of people is meant to remind the society, to constantly remind society to be absorbed in spiritual development and remind society that this is not what we're meant for. To just stay here in this world And to try to make a compromise with misery is not the goal of life. As we know that everyone is trying to follow the Western culture because they seem to be more expert at making compromises with misery. But actually it's an illusion. It's like I was thinking the night before last when we had this most wonderful ecstatic festival. As was mentioned, that you, in the West, you no way you could get this many flowers and make such a beautiful festival. Did we ever have any? Even in the most enlivened days, I remember when in Los Angeles, when Bhavananda Prabhu was there, when I first went as a guest, and they had gardenia flowers. And gardenia flowers nowadays they cost $2 one gardenia flower. They used to cost $2 one box, I remember when in those days, one big box of gardenias. But still, we never could afford throwing boxes and boxes of gardenias on the deities. That would be unthinkable. So actually, here is much more opulent. It's incredibly more opulent than the West is. The West people have to get up 5 o'clock in the morning. Every year now, you see traffic out earlier and earlier and earlier and earlier and earlier. Used to be 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock. Now it's 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock. So their so-called compromise with misery is simply a miserable life of working hard all day and night just for a tiny, tiny compromise with misery that they can come back into some nice apartment. But practically, they're never there. They're never able to be there in that nice apartment. The only person, does anyone know who the person who's always there in the house enjoying the house? The dog, yes. because in the West, the dog is the closest friend, the dearest friend, and he doesn't have to work. He has a better life. It's not a dog's life. He has a best life. He doesn't have to work, and he has a full run of the house, while the foolish master is out working like an ass all day long just to support the dog in his house. And this is their illusion, a so-called compromise with the misery of life. And, and then the last part of the purport is that Prabhupada says that as soon as one gets a material body, he becomes dehabrit or dehi. In other words, he's subjected to all material conditions. All material conditions means that as soon as you're in this body, as soon as we entered into this body and the body began to grow, material conditions means birth, death, disease, old age, adiatmika, adidaivika, adibhautika, all types of sufferings. And we can all attest, we're all lined up here, all of us who are over 50, and we're all here. Oh. As Bhavananda Prabhu was saying the other day, every morning you wake up and there's something new, there's some new point in the body where it's miserable. Because it's explained in Srimad Bhagavatam that actually from 16 years old until 35 years old, the body is very strong. And you think, and the senses are in their full of energy. And you think you're going to go on like that. You think that that's life. Life will always be like that. You'll always have that strength and that much power. And you'll always be able to enjoy your senses that much as when you're from 16 to 35. But then 16 to 35, just... we can all attest. I mean, it seems like yesterday. I can still see in my mind's eye, walking into the La Cienega temple, seeing you in the temple, and all these beautiful drapes were hanging down on the. I think you decorated also. And I can still see the Henry Street Brooklyn temple with that transcendental Vyasa sign, lotus flower Vyasa sign. But that was 30 years ago. That was 30 years ago, but it seems like yesterday. And that's when we were young. We were young and we were dancing. Bhavananda Prabhu was dancing, so spinning and dancing so with so much energy. He still has a lot more energy than I do. He's dancing much more. He can't spin anymore. But I remember he used to spin around. But we thought that was going to go on. I mean, even as devotees, even though we read, just like Tranakarta Prabhu was telling me yesterday, When we were young, we read through the books, but it just kind of, we just glossed over it, breezed over it. But now at a later age, you begin to get much more realization. As you have practical experience, you begin to get much more realization of what Prabhupada is saying. It makes much more, you realize it much more. Because you see that this youthful energy is gone. It's gone in a moment. It seems like just like a moment. It seems like you can close your eyes and it was just yesterday. And now it's all gone. Prabhupada once said that he took the devotees to Jagannath Puri. And he said, when I first came here, he had just finished university. And for a graduation present, I think they sent him, went to Jagannath Puri. He had just gotten married. And he said, I was running and frolicking and jumping on the seashore along the beach. And now I'm here with a stick. I'm walking here on the stick. And that's the youthful energy. It's gone. It seems like just a moment ago, a day ago, I was here jumping and running and so much energy now. That's all. Where is it all? So any of us who enter into a material body due to our ignorance of our actual position as eternal servants of the servants of Krishna, will be subject to material conditions. We can take all the medicine we want, go to all the doctors we want, or just like my father, every time I call him, he's 80 years old and he's had all those things, bypasses and spends thousands and thousands of dollars every year on medicines. And still, I'm okay. I said, you want me to come and help you, or do you need? No. I have insurance, health insurance. The hospital is right up the road. The doctor's there. I'm okay. Everything's fine. And he can hardly walk. He falls over when he walks. But he's thinking, because he's an atheist, he's not have any idea of God, no idea that, no shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna. Therefore, he's thinking, I made so many material arrangements up until now, so I'll continue to make material arrangements and compromises, and somehow I'll be able to avoid suffering. But no one is able to avoid it. None of us will be able to avoid it. Even us as devotees, we probably thought when we were young as devotees that, well, I surrender to Krishna. It says that the spiritual master takes all my karma, so it'll be a pretty easy going. The rest of my life, maybe I won't ever get sick and everything will be just easy. But actually we found that to be not exactly the fact. As it's explained that our karma, yes, the spiritual master, he takes our karma, but some residue remains. It's some token. Prabhupada would call it a token. We'll get a token bit of our reaction for our sinful activities. And then there's other factors besides our karma is that I was listening on one tape. It was Gaur Govinda Maharaj. I was listening to a class some time ago. It wasn't a class, it was a discussion with some devotees who were asking questions. And he was speaking how the disciple must strictly follow the order of the spiritual master. Otherwise he will have problem. He must strictly follow. And he had mentioned about, said, for instance, the spiritual master says, take only Krishna prasadam. And then you all think, oh, that's okay. I'll go to the restaurant. I'll offer it to Krishna and then take prasadam. And that's all right. And then he says, no, this is not the order of the spiritual master. He said, that's trying to cheat. It's trying to trick go around the order of the spiritual master. And then one devotee was asking, but Maharaj, what if the disciple, he has some trouble, he falls down, and then, well, the spiritual master is always merciful? And he said, yes, the spiritual master is always merciful because he knows that there will be some punishment. He says he knows that there's some punishment will be there. So if we make offense to Vaishnavas or we disobey the order of the spiritual master and fall down, then some punishment will be there. That's not sinful reaction. It's not like our karma, but it's a punishment, just like a father punishes a child to help him realize actually what the right path is, what not to do. That mistake causes suffering, and that actually he should follow the right path. So the mercy of the spiritual master sometimes, and mercy of Krishna sometimes comes as also as punishment or suffering, material suffering, even bodily suffering, due to our offenses. Not just and sometimes it's explained that Krishna will use our karma, so it's like he puts it on hold, and he may give a little out when we need a good lesson. We've made some offense or we've made some sinful activity, and then he will give us some of our reaction, of our karma. But it's directed by Krishna. It's not under the laws of material nature, as for the materialist, as for the non-devotee. But for a devotee, it's under Krishna's direction for our ultimate benefit. And then Prabhupada concludes here. Prabhupada is very, very nicely organized purport. The first is about begins the paragraph with the importance of a trained class of Brahminically trained leaders. And then he ends saying that the leaders of society must be so ideal that by following them, one can be relieved from the clutches of material existence. That means, they must be perfect acharyas, perfect example. As we know, teaching by example has the greatest effect. If someone tells us, go to Mangalartik, then he doesn't go to Mangalartik. After a while, it's inevitable. Our mind can't help but think, but if it's so important, why he doesn't go? And then naturally, our determination becomes weak. Because he's not going, so why should I go? He says, or as Prabhupada explains in the purport of that verse, yad yad acharyati shrestas tatarevatiyo taro jana, that and the Bhagavad Gita is that if someone is smoking, then he's trying to if a teacher is smoking, if he tells the student don't smoke, then no one will take him seriously. But we are inspired by example more than words, and that's why Prabhupada let us all out of illusion. Why were we all inspired to sacrifice our life? Why was everyone inspired to sacrifice their life for Krishna consciousness? Give up material life for Krishna consciousness? Because Prabhupada gave the example. Prabhupada said, eat this kind of, take only Krishna prasadam. Prabhupada only took Krishna prasadam. Go out and preach Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada was going out constantly preaching Krishna consciousness. Sacrifice all of your comforts and your life for spreading Krishna consciousness, because Prabhupada was doing more than anyone. Minimize eating and sleeping. Prabhupada was sleeping, how much? 3-4 hours a night, maybe? We tried to do that, but most of us, it's not possible. It seemed like, yeah, we would just get up. And I remember devotees, they would get up at 2 o'clock, chant their round, and then all for the rest of the program, they would be there. So I only slept 4 hours, but we're just like Prabhupada. But they would sleep 4 hours at night and then 2 hours during in the temple room. I know myself, I have the same problem. I'm the first to... If I don't sleep my minimum 6 hours, then somewhere or other during the day it'll come out, it'll be taken out somewhere. Generally in the morning program. But Prabhupada was the ideal teacher. And by Krishna's mercy, by the potency of Srila Prabhupada, he's empowering also those of his disciples who are strictly followed all of these years. They're becoming empowered. We can see they're becoming empowered to also set example for the future generations in how to execute Krishna consciousness. And if we follow them under the guidance of Srila Prabhupada and those who are being empowered by Srila Prabhupada, then we'll actually, even though we're in this Deha Brit, we're trapped in this material body and the material conditions, we'll actually be able to finish up our business in this life, be able to finish up this compromise with misery, and solve our problem once and for all and go back to home, back to Godhead. That's if we follow the proper guidance, the proper guided specifically by the pure devotees, and then by the Brahminical class. And then we can actually make a real solution. Everyone, even to the most simple street sweeper, he can make a real solution to all of the miseries of his life. So I'll end there, and if anyone has any comments or questions or corrections or observations. Some additions. My senior god brothers. Thank you. Yours was much nicer, and it was more inspiring. Yes, Prabhu? Gorshakti Prabhu?
In the beginning, you gave the example of Sudama Brahman. And in Krishna book, it is explained that they attended the Gurukul together. They were classmates. So to speak. And when Krishna was living in Vrindavan, because he belonged to the Vaishya community, it wasn't important that they go to Gurukul. And it was only after the killing of Kamsa. How old was Krishna when he killed Kamsa, you know?
Well, some say 12, that he left Vrindavan when he was 11 or 12. Some people say 15, some people.
So it was only
11
after,
or 12.
So it was after that when he was under the care of Vasudeva.
After Kamsa was killed, yeah.
Who was a Kshatriya, that he was enrolled in the Gurukul. Now, here in ISKCON, Prabhupada had wanted that all of our children go to the Gurukul at an early age. Am I correct in that understanding?
Big discussion.
is it that the Gurukul is meant for just the Kshatriya and Brahminical class, or is it meant for all classes?
Well, I know some places that Prabhupada explains that because a spiritual master, first he has to see the students, and then he will be able to judge their tendency. He has to have some time with them, instruct him. And then after some time, he will actually be able to see what their tendency is. Because in one sense, in the Kali Yuga, Kalo Shudra Sambhava, everyone is born Shudra. He starts on the low level. And by training, then he can be elevated. But as Prabhupada mentioned, especially near the end of his manifest pastimes, he said that the second part of my work is to establish Varnashram, because we can see that all the boys and girls, they're not necessarily ready for Brahminical life. So we have to set up the other Varnas and Ashram. Varnas in particular. So generally the advanced education was for the Brahminical class. And also some advanced education for the Kshatriya class and how to administrate and how to carry out their duties. And generally for the Vaishya and Shudra was to work under experts, like apprenticeship idea, as far as I know. Working under those who are expert in that field. But it required, the spiritual master was, one of his qualifications is that he was able to see the psychophysical nature of the student. And direct him. It wasn't necessary for the student to continue on. Exactly details, I'm not sure. Whether they sent him at 5 years old, as we know, because Krishna at 5 years old, he was sent out to the fields with the calves to learn the trade of cow herding. Not sent off to the Gurukula. He was sent off to the Gurukula when his Kshatriya father had the chance to. As Prabhupada explains there, that's the duty of the father to educate, give the education to the child. But in this case, we see how Krishna was educated only when he was seen as a Kshatriya. More than that, I'm not sure. Yeah. Akalal Prabhu.
The way Prabhupada called it, Varnashram College. So first there's the Gurukula, And that'd be up to something like 9th grade, 10th grade. Then a Krishna conscious high school that would continue from grammar school. And our ISKCON experiments with Gurukuls never went much further than grammar school. You know, that is not what Prabhupada wanted. It is one of the most abysmal, most horrific failures of this movement that has never been taken serious, that there should be Varnashram College training of the youth. So what happened was the children were devotees. Maybe not, you know, Uttamadhikari, but they're all little crop of little devotees. And then all of a sudden, let's say in Los Angeles, for example, all of a sudden they're herded to the pier, so to speak, and pushed off the end of the pier into the ocean of nescience of Karmi Meat Eater Association. This was never Prabhupada's plan, never. His plan was that they should have a Krishna conscious environment from grammar school up through a Krishna conscious high school where this, like a trade school.
Yeah, division according to their tendency.
Yes, yes. And of course, the spiritual master cannot always personally do this all this training. We don't have the Sandipani Muni situation anymore, and there are all these Desha Kalapacha considerations in the modern age of large society with ISKCON. There has to be a qualified system, as is being done here in Chaupe, and expanded even further and further into the secondary education, into the education for the high school youth, not just college, but also high school age youth, so that there's complete spectrum of Varnashram, then going into, say, around what, age 16, 17 or so, the beginning of Varnashram College and the training into different asics. And there is an important term also that everyone always has to remember, that Prabhupada calls it Daivi Varnashram, not the mundane Varnashram rejected by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his conversation with Ramananda Roy. Not that kind of mundane Varnashram, but Daivi Varnashram, which means
God-centered
Krishna, Varnashram. Krishna-ized, mm-hmm. Adding Krishna. Then, you know, that also, well, there's some tapes, conversations where Prabhupada was talking about, there are already many Vaishyas, and there are plenty, no shortage of Sudras. So then the emphasis should be on training Brahmanas and Kshatriyas. Of course, the Brahmanas means as if Chaupati program, training Brahmanas. But it's interesting, he says, also training of Kshatriyas. So then that's what gives some thought. Okay, well, if it's a need for training Kshatriyas to fill out this spectrum, what are we going to do? Open a police academy or a military academy? Is that how we're going to start Varnashram College to train? Because Prabhupada says we must train Kshatriyas. So my feeling in that regard is that it's the first phase one of training Kshatriyas is everything having to do with governmental administration and so forth, the principles of pure Dharma as taught by Vaishnavism. That phase one, before we have such academy, military academies or something, phase one rather would be training people into the values, pure values of Dharma, so they can become politicians, they can become leaders, and lead society according to Shastra.
Following the Brahmins.
Yes.
That's the first principle for Kshatriya, is that he learns how to take guidance from Brahmanas. That he understands the importance of Brahminical intelligence and Brahminical guidance. That he doesn't become like King Vena. Think, what is this botheration? These Brahmanas, we're doing everything. I'm controlling everything. Because we have power. We have material power. But the first principle is to learn to follow the spiritually elevated personalities. Yes, we have a long way to go, no doubt. It's a long way. But it's actually, if you like, I live in Italy. If you live there, you understand it a little better, because the church, Catholic Church in particular, it's been there for 2,000 years. Not 30 or 40 years, 2,000 years. It took them quite a while. And they have schools, they have churches in every corner, And they have school. They have quite an amazing organization. I mean, it's corrupt and it's dirty and everything else under the sun. But as far as organizationally, they built schools and education, and they made practically the whole country all Catholic. Now it's a big mess. But in the beginning, they made everyone, because they started with school system and everything. But it took hundreds of years, not 20, 30 years. So if you see that example, you can understand that it's not surprising that we didn't do everything in 20 years. Prabhupada gave us instructions and blueprints for the next 10,000. Prabhupada said these books are the law books for the next 10,000 years, not for the next 30 years or 40 years. So we have enough engagement. Even if we come back next life, we have engagement for many lifetimes of service to expand Lord Chaitanya's movement all over the world in every town and village. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam, Gantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.